This is Digital Story Podcast number 848, June 21st, 2022. Today's theme is 5 tips for photographers who want to shoot with iPhones. I'm Derek Story. I think it's safe to say that photographers approach their iPhone cameras just a little bit different than everyone else. And they are more likely to tap the software's advanced features. In that spirit, I have a show just for you, nimble photographer, who realizes the value of photography with any device, even the one that's in your pocket. I hope you enjoy the show. In my latest Medium article titled My Favorite iPhone Portrait Tricks, I tell the story of me showing up at a family gathering without any of my mirrorless cameras. So I felt a little sheepish when asked to make a couple's portrait. Fortunately, I've had plenty of practice with my iPhone 12 Pro Max, and thanks to that knowledge, I was able to pull it off. But it got me thinking that this might be a good time to share some more advanced iPhone photography tricks with our viewership, because we never know when we're going to have to reach into our pocket and use that device instead of the one that, well, maybe is left at home, right? Or somewhere else. But yet, people still look to us to deliver the goods. So I'm hoping that these 5 tips will help you do just that, regardless of the situation. Now, I will mention that I'm using an iPhone 12 Pro Max, so I know these are good on that camera and everything since then. Now it's an older camera compared to what you can get at the moment. And I think that these work mostly on iPhone 11. Before that, I'm not sure though. So mainly newer iPhone cameras. Okay, here we go. The back tap camera wake. Yeah, that's quite a mouthful, isn't it? But this is a cool technique, and especially for photographers who want to be able to take a picture quickly. Something's happening and bang, they want to get it. Because a photographer's eye often detects decisive moments before others. So to ensure that our camera reacts as quickly as we need, set up the back tap camera wake. And now, what does that mean? Well, when you just pull out your iPhone, you don't have to turn it on, you don't have to do anything, you just pull out your iPhone and you tap it twice on the back. When you do that, after you have it set up, the camera goes on. So you can imagine how quickly you can take a picture. You just pull it out of your pocket, tap twice. You can even do that on the way out of your pocket, right? As soon as it clears that top part of your pocket, you're tapping, hold up the camera, take the picture. That's really fast. Now, the way that you set it up is you go to Settings, Accessibility, Touch, back tap, right? And I have all this stuff in the show notes, so you can just go there and look. Now, when you go there, there are lots of options for the back tap. In fact, there's a 2-tap and a 3-tap. So what I did was I set up the 2-tap for the camera, and then I set up the 3-tap for the flashlight. Those are the 2 things that when I really need them, I need them fast. Flashlight, 3 taps. Camera, 2 taps. But you have all of your options there, so you can customize this any way you want. The thing that it does is that it will help you catch a decisive moment before it's gone. And I don't know about you, but prior to this, there were instances when I missed pictures just because I couldn't get everything fired up and ready to go fast enough. You might as well have a holster for your iPhone now, because you'll be able to draw and shoot just like that. The second one I call the angle bracket pointing down. The angle bracket pointing down. These are fun titles, aren't they? When you have your camera enabled, there's an angle bracket at the top of the camera interface, and it's usually pointing upward. And that's the interface that you normally see. If you tap on that angled bracket to make it point downward, it will reveal an entire row of camera settings right above the shutter button. Things like proportions, flash controls, exposure compensation, self-timer, and filters. All of that is hidden out of view unless you reveal it by tapping on that angle bracket that's up at the top. So, for example, if you want your flash to stay off all the time, that's fine. You can do that. But let's say that you want to do a fill flash. You want flash on instead of flash auto. Tap on that angle bracket, go to the flash settings, and that's where you can set it. Let's say that you want to use a self-timer. That's where you set that up. Let's say that you want to lock in a specific exposure compensation setting. That's where you do it. You do all of that stuff in the angle bracket menu. So just take a look at your camera interface, right? You'll see that angle bracket pointing up. Tap on it to make it point down, and it will reveal things. Now, this is also somewhat contextual, because if you're in portrait mode, then you can change the depth f-stop there. If you're in time-lapse and you do this, you can set the exposure for your time-lapse there as well. So there's good stuff in that angle bracket. I think we forget about things like that, and we forget about that we have more settings in just the regular camera app. You don't have to go to a special camera app, just the regular camera app. We have more settings than we sometimes realize that we have. Number three, the one-handed selfie shot. So selfie shots, you know, are important, because sometimes we need to do a selfie shot for whatever reason. You know, there's a million of them. So the one-handed selfie shot allows us to better compose our shot without getting our arm and stuff in the shot. We don't have to use two hands, one to hold the camera and one to tap on the shutter button. This method allows you to do everything with just one hand. Now, you use the volume down button on the side of the phone to take the one-handed selfie shot. So here's the way you do it. You start by switching to the front camera. Okay, so the camera, you know, the one that's on the glass, right? So you switch to that camera. So then you hold it up, and you can compose now, right, using that camera. But you hold it so that your thumb is on the volume button, the volume down button, you know, and you're kind of holding it as a bracket. And then your top finger, your index finger, is pinching the top of the camera. Now, this is a lot easier to do if you have a case off, because at least on my case, that volume button isn't nearly as responsive because of the protectiveness of the case. So if I'm going to do a selfie or something using the volume button as a shutter button, then I usually take the case off. So you're holding it like that. Now you can compose, and when you're ready to take the shot, just with one hand, you just move your thumb to do that bottom volume button, and it'll take the picture. And it does it really nice. And when you don't have any case on the camera, it does it great. It does it really fantastic. Now, what's really cool, if you want to take a better selfie even, you can go to portrait mode using the front camera. When you do that, then you get all the goodies for portrait mode. And in fact, if you, you know, do the angle bracket down, you can set the aperture. I usually set about f2.8 for the depth in portrait mode, and I do natural. I do the natural mode in portrait. Then do this shot, the selfie shot, in portrait mode using the camera, right, that's facing you, and you can compose it and then use the volume down button to take the picture. You can get a really nice shot doing this. And in a pinch, when you need a picture of you, let's say that you need it for an icon on a new website or a new group you're joining or something like that, you can do a current photo using this method. Portrait mode, front-facing camera, use the volume button, the volume down button, hold it in one hand, compose. And the last tip that I have on this is look at the little green light. You'll see a little green light near the top of your camera. Look at that green light, because that's where the camera lens is. And then that way you're looking directly into the camera lens. A lot of times we'll look at the LCD on these portraits. Don't look there, because that'll have your eyes just a little bit off. Look right where the green light is. Take that picture and you'll get a pretty cool shot. It might take a few stabs, But trust me, once you kind of get it all dialed in, you'll be surprised at what good results you can get. Number four, lens correction. So the ultra-wide lens on our iPhones get even better when you enable lens correction in the camera settings. Now, you have other useful options here as well, such as view outside frame and preserve settings. But all you have to do is go to settings, go to camera, and when you do that, if you haven't been in there for a while, if you haven't looked at the settings for your camera for a while, there's a lot of good stuff in there. There's a lot of good stuff in there, but if it's not enabled already, enable lens correction, because by doing so, then you'll get less distortion in your ultra-wide shots and they'll look even better. Finally, number five, this is my all-time favorite iPhone trick, right? It's not really a trick. It's a technique, I should say. And that's the long exposure technique. It's my all-time favorite. And this is easy. All you have to do is enable live photo. So enable live photo. Now, just keep in mind that live photo, when that's enabled, it starts shooting a little before you take the picture and a little bit after. It makes a little movie, essentially. So you have to hold the camera very steady and then take the picture with live photo on. And the classic way to get these wild results is to shoot moving water. Moving water is just fantastic with this technique. When you do that now, open up that image in Photos, and it can be photos on your phone or it can be photos in your Mac. Look for live, right? As in live exposure, there'll be a menu there and you can choose long exposure and it will convert that little bit of video that the camera took into a long exposure image. So you get the flowing water like you would with an ND filter, handheld, no tripod, no ND filter, no nothing. All you have to do is do this technique as I describe it, and you can get very, very good shots. Now, you can play with it as well. You can do some experimentation. So, for example, you can start moving the camera, let's say from left to right, tap the shutter or use the volume down button, tap the shutter while you're moving it. Don't move it too fast, move it slowly, and then go to long exposure and you can get like these blurred kind of pan zoom sort of things. You can play around with night lights, city lights, things like that. There's all sorts of stuff you can do with this technique. Just remember, you have to have live photo on, and if you want everything else sharp in the shot, then hold the camera very steady and let whatever's moving, such as water, get softened. If you want to experiment and have everything in the frame, be a little bit more creative, then start moving the camera before you take the picture, and then keep moving the camera for another second, and then go to long exposure. It's a lot of fun, and you can do some really neat stuff with this technique. Let's review these five. The back tap camera wake, that helps you get those decisive moments. The angle bracket pointing down, that reveals some additional settings that make it more like your regular camera. The one-handed selfie shot, this allows you just to use one hand so that you can compose the shot and not have your arm in it, right, and get a very nice shot. And remember, you can do this with the front-facing camera and in portrait mode, and it'll turn out pretty cool. I suggest depth of about f2.8, and you get some really good effects. Lens correction and other cool things in the camera settings, and then finally, the long exposure trick that you can do using live photo enabled, and then go to long exposure in either Photos for iOS or Photos for macOS. These are terrific things. And then I also recommend that you do read my article on Medium called My Favorite iPhone Portrait Tricks, because I go through the entire workflow for getting a very nice portrait with just your iPhone in Photos for either macOS or iOS. So you can do the whole job right there on your phone or on your iPad before you even leave the premises and get very, very nice results. So I hope these techniques help you get the most out of your iPhone when you don't have your mirrorless camera with you. Tell a friend. I was thinking the other day about how people love to tell me about their favorite podcasts, which I so appreciate. So then it got me thinking, we should be telling our friends about the Digital Story Podcast. It's available on every service that's commonly used. Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Amazon, Spotify. The list goes on and on. And if each of our regular listeners told just one friend about this podcast and encouraged them to listen, those numbers should be substantial, should be very nice, and we can broaden our community, make our community even bigger, which has all sorts of good results for everyone in this community. So let's try it. Tell a friend about the TDS Photography Podcast, and let's see what happens. I'm going to let these numbers roll for about a month, and then I'll take a look, and I'll let you know if we're able to move the ball forward. And thanks so much for your help with this. Senators want U.S. to follow EU and adopt a common charging cable. Talking about iPhones again, right? And iPads as well. You can read the entire article on Petapixel. I have a link in the show notes. Let me read you a little bit about this. A group of United States senators have written a letter to the U.S. Commerce Department advocating that the country should follow the European Union's decision to force all electronics manufacturers to adopt a common charging cable. My guess is it would be USB-C, right? Senators Ed Markley, Elizabeth Warren, and Bernie Sanders authored the letter to the Commerce Secretary to argue for a standardized charging system. The three senators say that the consumer electronics industry's largest players have hurt consumers by failing to establish a uniform charging accessory standard and forcing them to frequently change their charging accessories instead. Quote, "This planned obsolescence is expensive and frustrating for consumers and drives the proliferation of electronic waste," the senators write. "The lack of interoperability standards for charging and other device accessories also results in e-waste and environmental damage. As specialized chargers become obsolete with the introduction of new products, or as consumers change the brand of phone or device that they use, their outdated chargers are usually just thrown away," the senators continue. "When electronics are not disposed of properly, e-waste can spread toxins in the water, pollute soil, and degrade the air we breathe. In 2019, humans generated a staggering 53.6 million metric tons of e-waste, and only 17% of this waste was recycled. Chargers that are discarded and never used create more than 11,000 tons of e-waste annually. This is a global issue with a lasting impact on our environment and public health. The U.S. government must respond." So these three argue that the European Union has recognized this in passing legislation that requires manufacturers to adopt a common charging for electronics devices. We'll see what happens. I had followed the EU story, and it did pass, which means, for example, iPhones in the EU, after the date, and I forget what the date is off the top of my head, it's not that far away, will have to switch, probably, to USB-C instead of using the Lightning cable. So this will be an interesting story to follow. There is a certain logic behind their argument. We'll see what the U.S. Commerce Department has to say about it. Tool panel redesign in Capture One Pro 15.3. And you can read an entire article on this on thedigitalstory.com. I have the link in the show notes. So one of my favorite aspects of this new 15.3 Capture One Pro update, which just came out, is the tool panel design, or redesign, I should say. It's really nice, and I felt like it was a bit overdue, and I'm glad they got to it. So what I was thinking is, now since we have these nice icons and they've kind of restructured, they gave us some new tool tabs to play with and all of that, Wouldn't that be a great time for us to customize the tools panel to our own taste? And we can do that. And I think sometimes Capture One users don't realize how much flexibility they have in designing the tools panel. And so this is where your histogram is, highlights and shadows, sharpening, dehaze, all that stuff, color balance, all that stuff. That's in the tools column there, usually on the left side. However, you can move it to the right side if you wish. That is adjustable. So what I did was, inspired by this work that the folks at Capture One Pro did, I sat down and just customized it to my own taste. And I hadn't done that for a while, and it was really fun. So basically, here's the workflow to do that. It's very easy. And again, I have the article with screenshots and illustrations on the digital story, so you could really follow step by step, but I'll outline it for you right now. First, start by removing the tool tabs that you don't need. So at the top, like for instance, the first one that goes away for me is the tether tab. I'm not a big tether guy, and there's a whole tab dedicated to it in Capture One Pro. It's taking up real estate at the top of my tool tab panel. So I get rid of that. Now, when I say get rid of it, all I'm doing is moving that tab out of that top line there, right, where all the tools are that I normally use. It still exists. I can still bring it back. I haven't deleted anything. I've just freed up that real estate at the top of my tools tab. So first thing you do is get rid of any tabs that you don't need, okay, or that you don't use a lot. Now, the second step is you can customize within the tool tabs themselves. So for example, let's say that you want to get rid of one of the tool tabs because you don't hardly use anything in there. But let's say that there's one thing in there that you use, like the refine tab. You don't need most of the stuff in there, but you really want the sharpening adjustment. So what you can do is you can put any adjustment in any of the tabs. Any of the adjustments in any of the tabs. So you can move, for instance, sharpening, if you wanted to the new quick tab. They added a quick tab, so you can put sharpening there. You could put it in the exposure tab if you want. You can put it anywhere you want. And you can have it live in multiple tabs also. So this is super helpful because if you want to clean up the top tool tab bar there and you want to get rid of the tabs that you're not using a lot, but there is a tool in there that you like to use, just put that tool in one of the other tabs and then you're good to go, right? Then you don't need the refine tab anymore. You can just go to the quick tab to do your sharpening or any of the other tabs that you set up. So that's the second thing. So you remove the tool tabs you don't need, and then you customize within the tool tabs that you have remaining. And again, I have screenshots on how to do all this in the article. Once you get everything the way that you want, which is really fun and feels really great, then you can save it as a workspace so that you can come back to it. Or if you have different workspaces for different types of work that you do, then you can come back to this one. Or if you're sharing your computer with other photographers, then they all can have their own workspaces. It only takes a second, right, to switch from one workspace to another, and then it's your interface, and then it's your interface. So save your workspace, and the way that you can do that, up at the top of the where the tool tabs are, there's three dots, three vertical dots. You click on that and it'll allow you to save that workspace, give it a name. And then if you want to make changes to that workspace, you can. And then you can save over it or you can give it a new name. So when you do that, suddenly now you have this set of tools that are arranged exactly the way that you want. Only the tools that you use most of the time or for specific purposes. And it just feels really great. It's just like getting your bedroom all cleaned up or your office all spick and span. And suddenly you're motivated and the clutter's gone. Only the stuff you want is good stuff. So anyway, so that article is on the digital story. And I tell you, the inspiring new design they did in Capture One 15.3 makes this even more fun. I want to give you a menu secret for those of you that shoot with Olympus cameras. And this will work on the EM1 Mark III, the EMX, and the OM1. And it's called the low ISO processing. And I didn't know about this trick, but I found it and I had to share it with you. So basically what it does is that when you're shooting at low ISOs, if we set the, there are two options in low ISO processing. So if you set it to detail priority, the camera will prioritize image resolution and reducing noise. Both of those sound like good things. And then in drive priority, which is the other option, it will focus on frame rate, the number of images per second. That would be more for action photography and sports. So what I noticed was when I went to check mine on my OM1, that it was set up for drive priority and not detail priority. And I was going, oh, wow, I'm missing out on an opportunity for even more detail and even less noise. I want this. I want this. So here's the way that you do it. If you have an EM1 Mark III or an EMX, then you go to menu E1 and you look for exposure ISO bulb. You know, that's like a threesome there. And you'll find a feature called low ISO processing. Now, it's easier on the OM1, right? Because they redesigned the menu. So all you have to do on the OM1 is go to camera menu 1 and look for low ISO processing in the list. It'll be right there. It'll be right there. So it's easy. You'll have two options. One of them will be showing. Whatever's showing is what you have selected right now. In my case, it was drive priority. So I switched it to detail priority. And now I'm just dying to go out and shoot with it in detail priority and see if I notice any difference or not. You can get the most out of those low ISO images by adjusting the setting. Then, of course, if you shoot sports and stuff, then you probably want to switch over to drive priority. It's just a fun trick I ran across and I thought I'd share it with you. Okay, let's take care of a little virtual camera club news. Start out by thanking our Inner Circle members. These are the folks that support this podcast month in and month out. They're also the folks that share their pictures, their thoughts, their ideas. They help me navigate this ship. So we're headed in the right direction. And they're doing that through the new group that we started on Derek Story Online. They're doing that through our Patreon site, which is where you can sign up to become an Inner Circle member just by clicking on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. Go over there, take a look around, join us, pledge your $5 a month. You will get that money back and then some if you do any online workshops or if you do any physical workshops. You get discounts on all that stuff, and you get access to things that regular listeners don't. A big thanks to our Inner Circle members for supporting this podcast, and I look forward to having more Inner Circle members join us soon. I want to mention that I have affiliate links and affiliate tiles on all the pages of the Digital Story. If you look at the second column, where we have our advertising tiles, there are ads or tiles for both B&H Photo and for Amazon. Now, if you click on one of those first before you do any shopping and then just navigate once you're on Amazon or once you're on B&H to whatever it is that you're thinking about purchasing, that helps support the site if you do make a purchase, but it doesn't cost you anything more. Again, we have those tiles on all the pages of Digital Story for both Amazon and B&H, and we have links often in articles that link to specific products that I'm writing about, and those are affiliate links as well. For those of you who use those tiles and links, I so appreciate it. Thank you so very, very much. And finally, I want to give a huge shout out to our friends at Red River Paper. These are the folks that support inkjet printers everywhere, and they do so by providing a wide variety of paper surfaces, a wide variety of sizes, just about any size that you can imagine, including rolls. They have tons of accessories. They have ink for both Canon and Epson printers, tutorials, reviews, you name it, they have it for inkjet printing. And they also have a terrific Facebook page so that you can be part of an inkjet printing community at facebook.com/redriverpaper. These folks are passionate about inkjet printing, and they share their knowledge, and they provide us with the tools that we need so that we, too, can create great artwork from our digital images. A big thanks to them for supporting this podcast. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. I hope you enjoyed my iPhone trick. So I'm working on more goodies for next week. Until then, have a great week. Go take some pictures. Break out that iPhone. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.